So it's summer reading time here on Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and maybe you're breathlessly waiting for your copy of The Girl Who Kicked the Hornet's Nest, part 3 of the best-selling Girl with the Dragon Tattoo series. Well, while you wait for that delivery in your mailbox, in case you need something else to keep you company while you bury your toes in the sand, may we suggest a smaller, homegrown title that also happens to be this year's Pulitzer Prize-winning novel for fiction. It's called Tinkers, and it's set in northern Maine. The novel recounts the last days of George Washington Crosby, himself a tinker of sorts. He's a watch repairer whose dying mind skips back and forth across time in a way literary critics have called both elegiac and exquisite. Joining me now to talk about Tinkers, and it's his debut novel, no less, is author and Wenham native Paul Harding. Welcome to Radio Boston, Paul.
Oh, thanks. It's a pleasure to speak with you.
So before we get deep into this beautiful, delicate book, I actually want to start with another part of your life, and this part involves a little bit of music.
Uh-huh.
So that's you on drums with the band Coldwater Flat, is that right?
Yeah, that's from the first album, the indie release. I think that came out in 1992.
And you and your friends from UMass, you got together to form this band, Coldwater Flat. How does that person go on to become a Pulitzer Prize-winning writer who's celebrated for his profoundly philosophical, poetic, and quiet writing?
Well, I'm still trying to figure that out myself. When I was in the band, I've always had the interests of music, playing music, listening to music, and reading lots of books, sort of, you know, 19th century, early 20th century kind of classic literature. And so in some ways, the differences between, you know, the sort of loud social public process of being a touring musician and
rock and roll, essentially.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, we were total power trio. I played lead drums, I always say. It was very, very sort of bombastic and huge and over the top. But so even though writing is quiet and solitary and, you know, sort of different in that sense, they sort of fulfill the same need or desire. To me, it's almost circumstantial whether or not I have, you know, a pair of drumsticks in my hands or am, you know, typing away at the laptop.
Whether it be drums or writing, you seem to be a master at engaging in basically a form of pattern finding in life.
That's exactly right. I mean, that sort of is what carried over, which is, you know, having been a drummer, when I switched to writing, I certainly wrote and continue to write by ear, you know, and think in terms of the time signature of any given sentence, you know, and the number of beats in a sentence. I mean, I suppose that almost makes it sound like poetry, you know, the writing itself is deliberately and intentionally, you know, very lyrical. So there is a kind of musical, rhythmic cadence to it all.
And that lyricism is very evident early on in Tinkers, your Pulitzer Prize-winning novel. So can you read a little bit of it there at the bottom of page 15?
Sure. Tinker, tinker. Tin, tin, tin. Tin, tinabulation. There was the ring of pots and buckets. There was also the ring in Howard Crosby's ears, a ring that began at a distance and came closer until it sat in his ears, then burrowed into them. His head thrummed as if it were a clapper in a bell. Cold hopped onto the tips of his toes and rode on the ripples of the ringing throughout his body until his teeth clattered and his knees faltered and he had to hug himself to keep from unraveling. This was his aura, a cold halo of chemical electricity that encircled him immediately before he was struck by a full seizure. Howard had epilepsy. His wife, Kathleen, formerly Kathleen Black of the Quebec Blacks, but from a reduced and stern branch of the family, cleared aside chairs and tables and led him to the middle of the kitchen floor. She wrapped a stick of pine in a napkin for him to bite so he would not swallow or chew off his tongue. If the fit came fast, she crammed the bare stick between his teeth, and he would wake to a mouthful of splintered wood and the taste of sap, his head feeling like a glass jar full of old keys and rusty screws.
That's Paul Harding reading from his Pulitzer Prize-winning novel, Tinkers. And Paul, I have to wonder, Tinkers is actually a story of the son of Howard, who you just read about, George Washington Crosby. The story opens with the fact that George has 8 days to live. His body has been pretty much rendered useless, but he's in this unpredictable reverie of his final days, living in Maine. This is a character who's twice your age, at least, possibly even more. So why choose to inhabit the mind of a dying man?
It's interesting. I mean, there is this, I think this is a standard experience of a lot of writers. I mean, in my case, it's that when fiction presents itself to me for inspection or interrogation, it's not really a matter of choice. I mean, I never deliberately set out to write this stuff, as it were. And some of the dramatic premises of the story are based on sort of old semi-legendary family stories that my grandfather used to tell me, and upon which he would never elaborate. So it made them irresistible to me. And after he died, I just found myself thinking about them more and more.
Well, your grandfather, his own father, so your great-grandfather had epilepsy.
Yeah, that's right. And that's kind of one of these linchpins to the story that's, you know, based in remote fact. And so, yeah, my grandfather's father had epilepsy, and my grandfather's mother was going to have him committed to an asylum, and he found out about it and abandoned the family when my grandfather was 12. And the sort of deathbed vigil that goes on in the novel is loosely based on what happened when my grandfather passed away.
Mm-hmm. The book is set in Maine, and there's moments, there's passages that just ring with this very tactile sense of the Maine landscape. I mean, for example, there's a page where you write, "It was dark and windy outside, with flurries of snow swirling down from the sky as if they were chips dropping from chiseled clouds." Is it that you were writing about Maine that allowed you to really access the landscape as a major part of what's going on in the head of George Washington Crosby?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I mean, so on the one hand, I'm just deeply sympathetic and empathetic with New England transcendentalist writing. I'm very smitten with the landscape of northern Maine. I return every year to fly fish with my family. And then the landscape of the North Shore of Boston, just they lay claim to me and on this sort of cellular level. So I like landscape as it is. And one of the things that I had to learn how to do in this story was to, you know, be able to earn the right to write these long lyrical passages about landscape. I had to sort of telescope them through the characters' minds so that when landscape is described in the story, it is understood by the reader to be a function of any particular character's sort of perception, their experience of themselves in the world.
But that's the thing about Tinkers and about George Washington Crosby, your main character there. Because so much of this book does take place in his mind, the map of that mind is not clear at all. It goes forward and backward in time. That sort of metaphysical motion in the book,
it kind
of reminded me, it's like a different manifestation of that old Maine adage of you can't get there from here.
I think that's very apropos. I don't think that our minds tend to think chronologically unless we sort of discipline them to accommodate our schedules. Otherwise, things like memory are almost kind of catch-as-catch-can, and I think that that's something that's even more pronounced in a character whose consciousness is failing.
Well, Tinkers itself, the book took quite a bit of time before it bubbled up into the consciousness of American readers. I mean, you spent years receiving nothing but rejection letters from potential publishers who I read, you know, kind of asked, not in these exact words, but they were like, "Hey, this is a very beautiful, thoughtful novel, but where are the car chases?"
That's what I'm speaking.
That no one wants to read, the idea that no one wants to read this kind of slow, challenging, meditative novel anymore. What was your reaction to that?
The way I reacted to it was, I mean, just the quality of the rejection letters saying sort of the pace of life today and all this sort of stuff and everything's fast. And in a way, it made it easy for me to just not take it personally because I just felt like it was just two different planets.
Was there something about being from the North Shore, of experiencing so many seasons in rural Maine? Was there something about your connection to this place here that made it impossible for you to write a frenetic novel?
Yeah, I'm sure it was. I mean, my experience, particularly up on the North Shore, is of just, you know, spending a lot of time up in all the different Audubon sanctuaries that are up there and just sort of spending days watching just the light, how it changes in the woods over the course of a day spent walking around the trail. So it lends itself to meditation. It lends itself to contemplation. So, yeah, absolutely.
Well, do you think that your fiction, at least for the time being, will still largely take place in New England with New England type
characters? Oh, absolutely.
Characters?
In fact, the second novel that I'm about halfway through is set in Enon, which is where George Washington Crosby passes away. Enon was, I should maybe say, was just the original name given to my hometown of Wenham in the first third or half of the 17th century.
It has a very Old Testament feel, Enon.
Oh, yeah, it's in the Bible. If you trace the etymology, it's just a place with a lot of water.
Well, Paul Harding, thank you so much for joining us on Radio Boston.
Oh, you're most welcome. It was a pleasure.
Paul Harding won the Pulitzer Prize for Fiction this year. And if you've read Tinkers, tell us what you thought. Post a review on our website, wbur.org/Boston. Or give us a call and leave us a message about anything you hear on the show. The number for our new listener line is 617-353-1137.